Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Güter. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Whilst the heavens may have rained down with glorious, glorious snow, it is the season. We were greeted with a fantastic weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football, something that you just come to expect from this league, a league that is virtually averaging 3.5 to 4 goals a match day, lots of drama and plenty of excitement all the same. To help me plow through the snow that fell upon Germany this week, last weekend, it's the Athletic Seb Stafford-Blaw. Seb, welcome back to the program, and what a weekend of football we were greeted with, and it all started fantastically on Friday.
Sure did. Also, can confirm, Matt, that the snow is still falling in Germany, so that was not just a Friday night thing, that is a Monday morning thing as well, so onwards with the snow. Yeah, Friday night was it St. Pauli against HSV? It was cold, chilly, but an amazing occasion. Just really, as it always seems to be, those games are kind of passion plays, aren't they, rather than just football matches. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll dig into that.
Absolutely, and it was pyro for days. I mean, there's no shortage of pyrotechnics at those kinds of games. You don't need a helicopter or anything to clear the snow like they had to in Munich at the Allianz. But look, let's talk about the main game of the match day, the Stadt Derby, St. Pauli, HSV, virtually capacity crowd, mass atmosphere, snow as well. We got that on Friday night. So if you braved the cold weather wearing layers upon layers, you know, you can understand that it was that kind of evening. But the occasion really lived up to a fascinating encounter, which started fantastically for St. Pauli, who opened the scoring just 15 minutes in. A spectacular set piece from who else but Marcel Hartl, funny as His midfield partner, Jackson Irvine, who hit it on the first time. Daniel Hoyer Fernandez rooted to the spot. Maybe a hint of a foul on Jonas Meffert from Carol Metz, but we'll talk about that in a moment. St. Pauli thought they'd made it 2 just 4 minutes later when Elias Saad found Johannes Eggestein. Eggestein finishing brilliantly, but Saad was just a hint offside, and it was quickly given as a no goal. But they would get that goal just on 27 minutes in one of the most bizarre own goals I think anyone has ever seen. And if you stayed off social media to watch the game and saw the aftermath afterwards, you would have seen that that goal was being played on repeat and on repeat and on repeat. And Daniel Hoyer Fernandez was, I'm going to say, very unlucky because it was a dreadful pass from Guillermo Ramos. Clearly the weather has played a part here, that the 6-yard box was essentially like a horse racing track. It was just lots of potholes everywhere, and you know, in the panic of the moment, he's tried to clear, and unfortunately he's cleared it into his own goal. Hamburg did respond in the second half. They scored twice in the space of 3 minutes, first through Robert Glatzel, an excellent ball in from Van de Brempt to find Glatzel at the back post, and then Emmanuel Frey with just an unbelievable touch, and then immediately on the turn with the finish to beat Niklas Weisil to make it 2-2, his second goal of the season. But no one could find the winning goal as the weather really took over the game. The pitch deteriorated and so did the football. Neither team was able to find a winning goal. St. Pauli were closest, but the chances could only be described as half. The result means St. Pauli remained top, but Hamburg, well, they have to look above them now because there's more than one side just in front of them. Seb, you're obviously at the ground. We'll talk about the Hoyer Fernandez situation first. It's a really unlucky own goal, and he had to front the media immediately afterwards. What was your impression of the situation? Because after he made that mistake, it was clear the St. Pauli fans were getting on him every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, it rattled him, Matt. Like, you could clearly tell that emotionally, he was a little bit shell-shocked after what had happened, which, I mean, to be honest with you, culpability is an interesting place to start, because I agree with you. I think, full disclosure, I interviewed Daniel the week before the derby. I spent some time with him. Really likeable chap. And so, like, I am a little bit defensive of him. At the same time, I was amazed that Hamburg run that goal kick routine every single week, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen it so many times. And I was amazed that they tried it in those conditions, because the TV probably didn't do justice to just how inclement it was in Hamburg on Friday night and how bad the pitch was. But at the same time, like, the ball back from Ramos is just... I feel a bit sorry for all of them, because I think, like, Ramos is quite a good footballer when he's going forward. Mm. Not the best defender, not the most assured player under pressure. And so, like, I have to kind of point a finger at the manager. Daniel Jorge Fernandez said to me the week before, I spoke to him during the international break, and he said, Tim Walter's thing is always that. Don't worry about mistakes. It's going to happen. Like, just keep playing, because the price we pay for trying to control the game. And I love that from a coach. At the same time, I think that there has to be an element of pragmatism somewhere where you say, right, you're one down, right? You've also, the weather is what it is. You've also got a, Glasshouse more than a target man, but he has target man qualities. So that ability to go long always exists should you need it to. And what happened was you put your centre back in a position where you probably examined one of the worst aspects of his game. He got lucky because no one will remember his name,
yeah,
even though it's kind of his fault. And then Jorge Fernandez, and they obviously, like, he has that awful little bubble just before it gets to him, which kind of creates it. And, you know, it's one of those where I think you look at it and you think, well, it's the most harsh foul of harsh foul things to ever happen. Right, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, and look, that's fair. The like I see it from the goalkeeper perspective, if you want the ball to go anywhere, go to my left shoulder where it's going towards.
You're told as a child, Matt. Like, yeah. You're told as a child, as a centre back, right, or any defender, you play your ball. You play a ball back to the goalkeeper. First of all, like, okay, the old rule about going across your goal doesn't exist anymore, but. Mm. You never play it so that it goes in the goal if the goalkeeper misses it. It's like a schoolboy rule, right? Yeah. And so. It's a bobble touch, but then it's all a product of the environment. It's Ramos is, he's been rattled, his touch is a scuff, the whole thing's a nightmare. And actually, I missed it in real time because I turned away to make a note. There was a passage of play which I think ended with El Assad hacking the ball wide from quite a good position, if memory serves me. I went to my phone to make a little note, looked up and the ball was in the net. And I was with Ryan Hunt from the Stadio podcast, and I just said, what happened? We didn't see it until half time, because it's one of those, you just, you know. Yeah, it was terrible. And I have to say two things. I know we'll get back to the game, but well done to him for going to the media afterwards, because that's not easy. Also, and this is something that people outside Germany, probably won't know as much about, but at the end of the game, he went to the guest block and the Hamburg fans sang his name and alongside his teammates as well. And it's one of my favourite things about German football. If this happens in England, you know, he's being pelted and abused. Pundits in the studio are, you know, calling him all sorts of names. His children are being abused on Instagram. I felt like it was very touching, actually, that there was that sort of immediate arm around the shoulder, because I think there's a recognition, and rightly, that he has certainly been among HSV's best players over the past couple of years. And I think back, Matt, to, do you remember the first leg of the relegation game last year?
Yep.
When they got absolutely hammered by Stuttgart, and it could have been 7 or 8 without him.
Easy.
Save the penalty and everything. So very impressive emotionally to stand up to that afterwards. And he'll be back next week. He'll be playing exactly the same way, and he'll play very well, I'm sure. But
yeah. He's been a really good signing for them when they brought him in from Darmstadt. And it's been clear that, you know, it was a position that they'd had a revolving door with in there towards the final few years in the Bundesliga. And look, he's been...
Had Sven Ulreich in the Zweite Bundesliga for that season, didn't they, as well?
That was a wild season, and I don't think I've ever seen someone regress so quickly in real time. And then he went to Bayern, back to Bayern, and he was good. He was fine again. It's just, you know... But look, these things happen.
It happens.
Goalkeepers make mistakes. Players make mistakes. You know, it's just the unfortunate part about it is it's in a massive game. It's definitely going to be regurgitated on social media 6 months, 12 months. I remember the Mark Flecken situation when he was at Duisburg, where he was having a drink because he thought they'd scored and Ingolstadt just walked it in. and he's all kinds of confused. And, you know, 3 years later, are we still getting that regurgitated all over the place? And look, you know, the human element of it is how he still played relatively well, even though he had some
shaky
ribs.
Really good saves.
Yeah,
it's nothing more than it's his Ben Hunt moment, right? Like, it's that, and it doesn't really change the perception of the player. It's just something that happens, and if you play in that way, this being part of his game, he made that mistake in the second leg of the Stuttgart game. Like, it's just the way of it, and it's a hazard of the occupation, and particularly if your occupation is to play as he does, which, if you run the data on Jorge Fernandez, he's an outlier, like, in terms of where he plays and his confidence with the ball. And he grew up as an outfield player, which is unsurprising because of the way, you know, watching him. But I felt terribly sorry for him. It's an interesting thing, Matt, that how possessive you become and defensive you become of people you meet in the game. And, like, I can count on one hand the people that I've met and haven't liked, or who have been rude. There are very few of them. Daniel's a very humble guy. He's a very likable person. He's very approachable. You can have a chat with him, you know, beyond just interviewing. And he's charming company. And I just felt dreadful for him when it happened. It's an interesting thing, because you spend, what, half an hour with someone, they become your mate. Obviously not, right? But you do have that slight sense of being possessive and defensive, like, leave my guy alone, right?
Yeah, I can emphasize that. At the start of the season, I interviewed John Iredale, who's a striker for Wiesbaden, and I feel the same way. Like, I'll protect him, you know, through...
You'll swell with pride when he does good things as well. Yeah, absolutely.
100%. Not only because he's Australian, but because of the, you know, our conversation and post that, it was, you know, he's genuinely...
It humanizes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he humanizes them and, like... Yeah, it's hard. I remember thinking, I just want to go down to the pitch and give him a hug.
Yeah.
Because it's just, yeah. I feel this is a good place to have this conversation, because I feel like there's not enough compassion in the game.
Yeah.
Like, I feel, so when you go online and you see, like, obviously when something like that happens, realistically, there's going to be a lot of mirth and laughter because that's just what it is. I feel there's a line that, I think, and I hope I'd say this regardless of who I'd interviewed or not. I feel like you get people that, particularly big accounts, who go down the kind of, in case you missed it, like, no one's missed it, because it's the most popular video on social media. You're just using the opportunity to have a bit of a pile on, and also you want some clicks. And I think there comes a point, I don't know whether it's about time or volume of tweets, but there comes a point where you think, it's human being, right? So, just remember that, human being. But also, I often feel like it's probably hardest for family members. I don't know enough about Daniel to know, you know, whether he's got kids or wife or whatever. I don't think we're very good at that. I think it's very Premier League mentality, where you're like, you're shouting at avatars rather than human beings. And it's a difficult one. He'll be fine. He'll get back to it.
Yeah.
He'll be okay.
He will. The game itself, though, was... For mine, yes, it was really one-sided. I think St. Pauli had control of the game. But this is a credit to Hamburg, because we've spoken about this a few times throughout the season. If they were 2-0 down last season, the year before, they're not getting back in this game. Game's over. No. Yeah, just put a cue on the rack and see you later. But how efficient they were and effective in the second half. And there's the classic cliche where 2-0 is the most dangerous scoreline in football. And I'm guilty of saying that almost every week. But once
the Bundesliga, man. Like,
three to four goal leads are even dangerous in this league. Like, they get the Glatzel goal, and immediately they get back down there again. And look, it's such the Farag goal is good. And he's an interesting player for them, because he was one of their bigger names they brought in the summer. He started out playing as an attacking wide player in the first half, then Volta switches it up, brings him as a number eight alongside Benesch and Murphy in that midfield. But he just has license to go wherever he wants, it seems. And with effectiveness, especially when they go forward in that goal, he was one of the first leading the rush ahead of the likes of Glatzel and Dompey. And look, he's going to be a really important player for them going forward.
100%. I feel like it was a little bit of a false dilemma for Rai because we created Hartsfeld's first goal of the season against Schalke, and you thought this is great signing with that kind of round the corner ball for Glatzel. And I think what's got in his way a little bit is he's quite brittle physically. He's not the toughest player on the ball. And I think sometimes, and without the pace of someone like Dompey, I think that costs him sometimes. Mm. But clearly he's a very talented player. And I think in those moments, it's really interesting when you have a pitch like that, because you mentioned it in the lead-in, but the pitch deteriorated so quickly that the quality of football that Pauli played in the first half just wasn't possible really in the second half, because the ball wasn't rolling properly, it didn't bounce equally, you know, it was a nightmare. But his touch and finish is testament to just how good how much ability he has. Because there's a kind of, think about the margin for error or the margin for opportunity in that, like the window to actually, to beat the keeper, yes, but to beat the defenders as well from that position is just ridiculous. No margin for error. And so it's one of those moments, I feel like he's in that, Hamburg have got like a few players in this category who you think on their day that they're so destructive. Dompey's one of them. I think Dompey is a bit of a tease as a footballer. Like I think he's got all the ability in the world, but there's a reason why he's playing second division German football. And you can see that sometimes some of the decisions. I would also, one of my kind of bones of contention with him is the Mikkel Bronsis incident from last year, when they went street racing down Hafenstrasse. You know, I don't know what you're thinking. Like, everyone's apologized good, but bizarre thing. Even by Hartsfeld standards, just crazy, right? If you don't know that incident, look it up. There will still be a lot about that online. And I think when you lose Rice from that side, when you can't expect Benyez to be at the standard that he has been over the first 3 months of the season, you need players like Ferrai, Dompey. Jatta was not available for this game, but Jatta is a very hit and miss, feast and famine kind of player. Like, he's either doing brilliant things or awful things. Like, you know, we know this. So hopefully there's a sort of a steadier beat of contribution from Ferrai going forward. But this is a great moment. And credit to Hartsfeld, because they could have been 5-0 down at halftime. They were that bad. Sampaoli was so much better technically. Like, they just looked better coached. They looked, their exits were just of the higher standard. And I left thinking, even after the full time and the 2-2, I left thinking they're going up.
Yeah,
they just look so much better than everybody else at the moment.
And just the versatility of their sort of squad and their depth as well.
Have they surprised you? Like, as a, if you, because I said, I was speaking to someone over the weekend, and if you look at what they lost, so lose Daschner, they lost Paccarada, like, to lose that level of set piece quality. Is a huge problem. They lost Medic to Ajax.
Yep.
Back in August. And they're better because of players like Eggestein has been a real surprise to me. Like, I thought he'd kind of already flamed out a little bit. Elias Sad looks like Mahrez now. You know, he just the from where he was a year ago to that very weak on the ball, good technically, but, you know, really lacked dynamism, to where he is now. It's just Saliakis has come on as well. I think he's been terrific. Hartl looks like the best player in the division.
I think he is. You know, whatever he's selling, but he's always been a strong Zweite Bundesliga player. But under Hertzler, he is the guy.
Looks like a Bundesliga player.
I would say, yeah. And finally, and maybe we'll get to see for once, because he's been with Union and then thrown away to Bielefeld for 1 year, and then with St. Pauli. But I had them, I think, third as in my preseason predictor. But yeah, even for third, they are so much better than I thought they were going to be. They've got cup action. We've got some Pokal this week. St. Pauli are at Homburg, which is the lowest team remaining in the Pokal, whereas Hamburg have a trip to Berlin to take on Hertha, which should be an interesting
it's a great game, though.
It is a great one, and hopefully Hamburg will bring a strong contingent as they continue their cup run. We'll quickly move to Kiel. Holstein Kiel welcomed VfL Wiesbaden on Saturday afternoon, and what seemed like a afternoon stroll for Kiel, who were 3-0 up thanks to goals from Steven Skripski. Fita Arp, who scored back-to-back game goals for the first time since 2020 when he's playing Dritte Liga football for Bayern. And Finn Porat, an ex-Hamburg player, made it 3-0 after 58. And look, they were cruising to victory. It seemed all so simple. And then Ivan Pretayan scores on 81 minutes. And then he scores again from the spot to make it a little bit of a hairy ending to the game. Pretayan's got 6 goals this season. He's Wiesbaden's top scorer. But it wasn't enough for Kalczynski's side to get back a point. Kiel move up to second in the standings. They've won 3 games on the bounce. And it's been a really impressive rise for Kiel because there were tons of question marks going into this season. You know, fans weren't particularly happy with Marcel Rapp and the lack of footballing identity that the team had. But this season, they're really fun to watch. They have a lot of guys they can plug in and play. You know, they've had Shuto Machino. We've seen Simakala. You know, your Picklers, your Skribskis, Fita Arp, who, you know, has really a lot to prove as that sort of wunderkid.
I forget he exists until he does things in games. I always forget about him. Like, he feels like he's someone that almost exists, has two identities, like the player he is and the player he was on, like, Football Manager and stuff, and the way people used to talk about him. But by the way, like, I think worth mentioning, like, his role in the turnover that led to the penalty. Like, I think that's just, like, it's really nice to see him contribute, like, in a, what's the right way to put it? In a kind of systemic way. Mm. But can we just, the Skrivsky moments, right? So, like, I so for people who haven't seen, Steven Skrivsky goes through and has a really good chance. Could square it, doesn't square it. Misses instead, and then gets balled out by like half his team, and you know gets shouted at and pointed at quite a lot. I think okay, fine, goes through again, same decision. I have to like beyond a point, you have to admire that, right? You have to just say, oh, I love the conviction.
Shoot or shoot, as they say in basketball. Shoot or shoot. You know, I would say the second one was less likely. You could really square it, like Pickler's a bit.
I haven't got a problem with the second one. Like,
but the first one, the first one's egregious. Yeah.
If the first one he has to square it. The second one's only an issue because of the first one.
Yeah,
I think like it's kind of, I feel like the reaction to him is a little bit unkind from some of his teammates because I think it's the right decision. If he doesn't, if that happens in isolation and he squares, I think we're accusing him of lacking the bottle to take the opportunity on. I think that's probably it.
No, you're right. You would be like, why didn't he shoot? He's in a great position. Just shoot, you know, do something. Look, Kiel's run, and you know, we talk about the international breaks and how they can divvy things up. No problem for them. The one thing they were always really good at, even last season, scoring goals. They're one of the highest goal scoring teams in the league. Their problem defensively was that they were the worst team that survived goals.
I was going to say, didn't they're actually the worst team outside of all, not just the relegation places, but relegation playoff places.
No, they were awful. But this year, like, it's they've done it through younger players. Keane Adelaide has really has been really surprising. But they've also just got a really good mix in the midfield. Like, that, who would have thought that Lewis Holtby, who's playing some really good football this season, along with Philip Zander, who's quite young to be a captain of any team, you know, they have such great leadership and chemistry and arguably an underrated pairing of midfielders because they're doing quite a lot, especially in transitional phases and getting the ball forward.
Yeah, their transitions in this game were really impressive. And also, like, that defensive thing. So I know how this game ends, but I feel like that's a little bit of a false economy. I thought they defended pretty well for most of this game. And like, the last 15 minutes of it, including injury time, is a little bit of a concentration issue. I didn't have the same concerns about, like, their system defense as I did last season. They didn't feel quite as vulnerable. And they've been so much better at shutting games down this year, like getting into winning position and then holding it. There was that, a couple of weeks ago when they're playing Hearts of Our at home and they lost their lead. And they rebalanced and recovered it. And I feel like I can't remember how long there was between the goals, but there was a 2-2, and then they went 3-2 up within about 2 or 3 minutes. And last season that doesn't happen.
No.
Last season they just lose. And I feel like that's a pretty good bellwether for where this team is. And I'm glad you mentioned the defense, the midfield, sorry, because I think that Holby is playing super football.
Yeah.
He's playing as well. Like, he almost got to the point, I think, where I think a lot of people just assumed he'd retired a year or two ago. Mm. And he's playing really nicely. He's playing that really kind of elder statesman role in midfield, popping up with the occasional assist, nice little run. There's still some dynamism in his game. His legs are not what they were, but they're not completely gone. Obviously won the penalty for the first goal in this game. But it's a really nice story. I want to meet Kiel's groundsman.
Yeah.
Did you see the state of that pitch on Saturday? It's immaculate. Absolutely immaculate.
It's something in the water up there, I think. It's
it's even further north than Hamburg. It's pretty much in the Arctic Circle, Kiel. Like, what has he done?
He's got the Krabby Patty formula. That's what he has. I should put respect on the defender. It's Colin Kleiner Beckel. Can't believe I got his name wrong. But him with Patrick Erashu is more of a central midfielder. And Izevic, who is a Serbian international, who also plays midfield. And it just... sometimes it just doesn't make sense, but you look at what St. Pauli did with Eric Smith. They turned him into a ball-playing centre-back. It just works, and it works with this system because those centre-backs are able to get forward as well. I think the amazing thing with Kiel this season is their best player was Fabian Riese last season by like the length of the Flemington Strait. And they're also, you know, somehow they're also better. They're incredible, and I love this. I love their team purely off the basis that they have a lot of players who are very tactically versatile. They can play different positions. I remember seeing, like, last season, Arp was playing as like a left wing back on random occasions, and he was playing that position quite well. It was really weird. It won't happen again this season, I'm sure of it. But when the system is working, especially attacking wise, they are one of the most fun teams to watch. If there was like a league pass, like there is in the NBA, Kiel would be a team you'd have to watch every week.
Yeah, 100%. I also feel like they're kind of representative of a trend in the division, which is that I think you settle sides into two categories, like either the kind of, you know, the big sulky clubs that are kind of dealing with you know, self pity, Schalke, or you get these sides who understand how to maximize their resources. And like, You're absolutely right. When you talk about kind of tactical versatility, I think you think of Kiel now. Like, I would say that actually that Arp's left wing back phase was a little bit resentful. At times it was quite weird. It was really weird.
Yeah.
But then you're right. You have to be able to kind of reimagine some of your pieces, and they've done it so well. And I think that's kind of like, Holby is actually a pretty good example of that, because I don't think really he would have been many people's idea of like a central midfielder a few years ago. Like, I don't think he had that sort of discipline in his game. He was always, as a younger guy, and I'm going back to kind of like his Schalke days, he had a wildness. Like, certainly he was expressive and talented, and I think, you know, a really good passer, but like positionally completely wild. And that's probably what stopped him going higher in the game, in my opinion. But now, as you look at him as a kind of a building block of that side, I think if you're able to match players like that, and then you're able to drop in the occasional wrinkle, like put in a ball player into your defensive line, or like a forward out wide, for instance, because I'm still not playing an orthodox position,
no.
Even now, right? So like, he's not the player that he comes through as a quote unquote number nine, and that's not his role in this side. All credit to them. And I feel, given what happened to them during the COVID year, and people don't know, obviously, you know, they fell away from a really strong promotional position, but they fell away because they had COVID absences and then were forced to play a run of games in a very, very short space of time, which, to be honest with you, would have taken a toll on like Manchester City's squad, frankly. And it's one of the great injustices, I think, in German football, that, like, I know it was a product of its time, but I still have a bit of residual sympathy for them as a result of it, because that was just I don't know how you get over that. And I think their performances, Matt, over the past couple of years as a club, I think describe what happens emotionally when you suffer something like that. And so it's really nice to see them performing well again.
100%. And it's quite funny. It's not funny, but it's great to see that they've had really three pivotal managers in their time in the Zweite Bundesliga. Marcus Anfang, who is a good chance of getting Dynamo Dresden up for next season. Tim Walter, who's been with we forget the Stuttgart time, but he's been there in Hamburg, and now Marcel Rapp.
He was at Bayern Munich, he was in their youth system. Yeah, like let's call Walter a zealot, I think. A fundamentalist.
We'll call him a one-way operator because he operates one way.
doesn't believe in setting behind the ball.
There is no seconds. Wiesbaden have got Eintracht Braunschweig on Friday night. Kiel at Fortuna Düsseldorf. That is a world feed game. So in America, ESPN Plus, down under, BN Sports Connect. Go check that game out. Let's talk about Düsseldorf as our final game, as I'm looking at the time and I'm starting to get really scared of our time. Okay. They went to Nuremberg on Saturday afternoon, and the snow was heavy. There was a substitute referee's decision. Ricard Hempel did his calf. Asad Nuhum got his first Zweite Bundesliga start. Congratulations to Asad.
Yeah.
And what we saw is post that, it was just Fortuna, Fortuna, Fortuna all the way. 5-0. Second consecutive game they've scored 5 goals this season. Vincent Vermey scored a hat-trick. He should have had a hattie last week. He got his hat-trick this week. Ayo Tanaka and Jona Nemec. Nemec scoring in his second consecutive game off the bench. This game was just so one-way traffic that it might have been easier if Dusseldorf had just stayed home and taken the 3-point forfeit, because Nuremberg were just a non-factor in this game, to the point where part of their main fan scene left at half-time. They stopped supporting the team, and it was just a real shambles. They've really come out of the international break in horror form. They've given up 9 goals in their 2 games, 4 against Karlsruhe. But to lose 5-0 in the way they did at home is inexcusable in my books.
100%. So added context, obviously, like, you know, listenership here knows this, but for fans to leave at half-time in Germany is a big, big deal. Like, it just doesn't happen. It's not like the Premier League where, like, people just, you know, beat the traffic or leave. That's it. That's a serious social statement. And I'm actually with them. I thought Nuremberg were a disgrace. In terms of, like, there's always two ways of looking at a defeat like this. Like, the technical, tactical aspect of it, sure. I thought the effort wasn't good enough. I think for anyone who hasn't seen the game, I think you don't really need to actually look beyond the highlights of the goals, because I think within that, you can see, first of all, like, the familiarity within the moves that lead to the goals, like that back post ball, that it's incredible to me that that you don't learn how to cope with that over the course of a game. But also, like, the basic one-on-one contest element of this game, because 5-0 doesn't describe just how dominant Fortuna were. This could have been 10.
Yeah.
And at home, I don't care about the snow. Like, you know, it's nice, the same for everybody. It's difficult, but some of the goals they conceded. And, like, at some point, if you're a defender, your pride probably compels you just to clatter somebody.
Yeah.
Like, you know, look at the fifth goal, Matt. That, right, you see sort of that there's never a challenge there.
Well, the ball starts with the goalkeeper. It's just a long ball from Kastenmeier, Nemec, Vermey, Nemec, goal. And it was so easy.
But when there's never a challenge.
I agree. Just take him out. Do something. Stop. Like, just
take the yellow card. Like, you're 4-0 down at home. Your fans have left. You are humiliated. Show some anger about the situation. Show a willingness to retaliate to what's happened to you, because you've been made to look absolutely ridiculous on your own pitch. And yeah, I honestly, it actually made me quite angry to see, because you know, people come out to watch you in those conditions. Yeah, playing is difficult, but standing there watching games in those conditions, also not great. People are willing to do that. People are willing to spend their money. That's just nowhere near good enough. Fortuna are great. I like Daniel Thun, so you know, well done to him. And actually, they're playing really well at the moment. And the bigger issue, of course, the Fortuna for Al scheme is for the benefit of football, hopefully. So I think they've kind of picked up a few neutral well wishes along the way. So that's one side of it, not ignoring that, but nowhere near acceptable. And that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of game which, in my very childish kind of football manager way, would end Nuremberg careers. Like, just because I think it's the line in the sand, isn't it? You have to throw a few people overboard to kind of make an example of them. I'm not going to point fingers at individual players. I think we can work out who they are, but
you
don't say it.
I mean you couldn't sub out all 11 players if you wanted to, but I think the tension has been building even from the start of the season, the reign of Dieter Hecking as sporting director, and it's clear that like they're just tired. They wanted a fresh voice. This is the squad he's built for so many different managers over the past 18 to 24 months, and really there's just no progress. And the reliance, like if you look at their season as a whole, they've relied heavily on a 17-year-old who's just been unbelievable this season in Chan Uzun. But there's so much he can do. He was pulled at halftime, which was probably a good thing for him. But just it's the care factor. I saw it a lot with Bielefeld last season, where when they gave up games, they really just, not just the queue and the rack, they just disappeared. You know,
that felt like interesting you bring up Bielefeld, because that felt a lot like self pity. Felt sort of like, you know, relegation hangover attitude. Now this is my cat has just walked in. Yes. This to me. So we talked about like how prosperous Fortuna found it just to play balls to the back post all day. That is, when that happens, that isn't necessarily exploring a tactical weakness or like a, you know, structural problem in its side. That's just saying, right, well, we just don't back you to compete for that ball.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the label for this game. That's what I thought about when I was watching it, at least.
I mean, they were taking the piss. It was just, it was so much, it was so easy. And just, poor.
Shambles. Absolute shambles.
I agree. But let's see if we get a response there in the cup this week against Kaiserslautern. Then they've got Elversberg away, which should be an interesting game. Dusseldorf, well, they get Magdeburg twice in the space of 12 days. They get them in the cup, and then they get them on the final match day before the Christmas break. We'll head to our Group 2 games in just a moment, but we have to say goodbye to Sepp. Thank you so much for coming back onto the podcast. It's a real pleasure. Anything you'd like to promote? We know that there was a fantastic chat with Heidenheim manager and Zweite Bundesliga legend Frank Schmidt. Definitely worth the time. And of course, your conversation with Daniel Hoyer Fernandez is definitely worth a look as well.
Yeah, it was great fun to spend time with Frank Schmidt, and one of the great people of German football now, as well as obviously, you know, beyond his record, which, by the way, he's not really interested in talking about. You bring it up with him, he'll say, nah. He's a very decent person. Also, he's very, very quick to share the credit around the club and to point attention towards people who've been there with him. Like, obviously, CEO's been there since 1995. He's got, he played with his sports manager. Yep. His goalkeeping coach has been there since 1986. Like, so,
yeah,
it's an amazing story. And he's right. It does go beyond Frank Schmidt, but he's a wonderful man to spend time with. And let me put it this way. He's exactly what you'd hope he would be. It was a real privilege to spend some time with him.
There's also a video on TIFO that you can check out about Heidenheim's rise, which is definitely worth a watch. I just love the fact that Heidenheim's found its way to TIFO, so it's a big win for me. I'll leave you to it. Thanks again, Seb. But we will definitely have you back on the podcast at some stage during the Rückrunde.
Brilliant. Thanks, Matt.
After the defensive disaster class last week in Dusseldorf, Schalke were in desperate need of a response. They welcomed Osnabrück on the other Friday night game in very cool conditions. But it was ice-cold Schalke that got the win in the end. 4-0 was your final. Goals from Marcin Kaminski, although deflected off Nicholas Wyman. Paul Seguin after the break, Simon Terodde from the spots, and then a Florian Kleinhansel own goal, which has also been considered as a goal for Keenan Karaman, but the official scorers have decided that it's a Florian Kleinhansel own goal. A baptism of fire for Uwe Koshinat, who has taken over the reins in Osnabrück. And look, it was a really poor performance from Valfell, and I can understand that they're going through the change with Koshinat. Defensively, they were okay, but they gave up some really good high quality opportunities. I think 4-0 was probably maybe even a little bit flattering for Valfell, who just weren't at it offensively. They just struggled to create high quality chances, and it showcases that in their XG of a 0.24. Rarely tested Ralf Fährmann. And it's unbelievable because, you know, Schalke are extraordinarily vulnerable, but you have the two worst defensive teams in the league, and it almost seems inconceivable that Osnabrück weren't able to get on the score sheet. And the real problem, I guess, for them is that at 4-0, that's when they started to get going forward. They had 8 shots in total for the game, and 4 of them came after minute 70. So not particularly ideal situation for them. And the big issue with the results that happened on the weekend is they're now 9 points adrift of 16th place Schalke. And it's going to be a Herculean task for the worst defensive team in the league, a team that has also started to struggle to find the back of the net, to push their way out of the bottom two. And it's might be one of those weird seasons where we've got a sort of a foregone conclusion regarding positions even before we hit the winter break. I mean, anything can happen, but it's been a real struggle for VfL, and potentially might be one of those cases where looking to the future is the modus operandi. For Schalke, a much-needed victory for them, and a lot of good things happened in this game. Really enjoyed the sort of the return to a bit more of a conventional back four, the overlapping between Derry John Merkin and Tobias Moore. Those two played really well together. They're very complementary. And I guess Moore, both of them know how to play left back and left midfield. So when one goes forward, the other one can sort of drop back, but they love to get forward. And they really return to basics, get the ball in the box. You've got the all-time leading goal scorer in Simon Terodde, who they started this, who Carol Gerrits gave the nod for the start. And look, he could have had 2 or 3. He looked a bit rusty. He looked like someone who hadn't scored in quite some time, and that would be true. Match day 2 was the last time he found the back of the net for Schalke 04. It's also their first clean sheet since match day 2. That was that game against Kaiserslautern at home. There's still bigger challenges ahead, and that starts on Sunday afternoon when they make the journey to the Ostseestadion to take on Hansa Rostock. If you look at two teams that really need to pick it up, and Schalke is obviously one of them, but Rostock equally as such are in need of another victory. So look, I guess the positive thing for Schalke is we know offensively they're still quite decent. 27 goals this season. If you compare that to teams in the promotion race, you know, St. Pauli 29, Kiel 29, Hamburg 30, Dusseldorf 34, and Fürth 24. You know, their scoring output is, it can't be denied. You know, they've got the individual quality to do that. It's just defensively they've been really awful. And it's, I mean, you look to 10 of those 33 goals they've conceded this season have come in 2 games individually. So, yeah, look, it's still obviously a work in progress, but if you look at the full form, they've won 3 of the last 5. But I guess a lot of it has to do that they've got to finish the season well. And obviously taking 3 points in Rostock would be a really good start for them. They take on Fürth to end the Hinrunde for them. That's a world feed game. Osnabrück have a really difficult run home there. They've got St. Pauli at home, and then they make the journey to Berlin to take on Hertha to finish the Hinrunde. And given how well Hertha are playing at the Olympiastadion this season, that is going to be a massive task for them. And it looks like there's going to be a bit more pain ahead for VfL. But got to commend the fans, the 6,000 that made the journey to Gelsenkirchen, given the club's situation at the moment. I think we sort of lambasted a little, you know, battered Nuremberg's main support, but you know, credit has to go for Osnabrück. That takes a big show of strength, given the difficulties they've had returning to the Zweite Bundesliga, that they're still behind their team, regardless of what's happening on the pitch. Teams that needed to get back to winning ways, well, Kaiserslautern won in particular, three defeats on the bounce. They made the journey to Magdeburg for the top game on Saturday evening. Magdeburg were hoping to make it back-to-back wins, and they would do so with a score of 4-1. Luke Castaños, Herbert Bockhorn, Connor Krumpicki off the bench, Cristiano Puccini from the spot. With goals, Terence Boyd scored a nice goal on 25 minutes. But for Oliver Schaefer and Nicholas Martin, who were the interim coaches, it was a baptism of fire, and Christian Tietz did not let off the gas pedal. I guess we'll talk with Kaiserslautern first. Like we've talked about it quite a bit, about the need for Ragnar Ake, but we'll see what direction this team goes in now that on Sunday they announced that Dimitrios Gramotsis is going to be the new Kaiserslautern coach. An interesting appointment, of course. He was formerly of Darmstadt, and he had a really good season with Darmstadt for that fourth place season, and then with Schalke, part of the team that was relegated and then sacked midway through his one and only season with them in the Dritte Liga before Nulfia made their way back to the Bundesliga. Funnily enough, we've seen this story before. Back in 2019, Dirk Schuster was axed by Darmstadt and replaced by Dimitrios Gramotsis. So history's repeating itself, and he doesn't really have a long time to acclimate himself because, as we've mentioned, they've got a cup game on Tuesday night, 5 o'clock local time, against Nürnberg. So if we're talking about need of instant impact and whether he coaches that game, I'm not to be sure, but I would expect he will. Massive game for them. But yeah, defensively they were challenged. They really couldn't stop Amici, Castaños and Artic, who just bullied them going forward. And even though like Kaiserslautern were able to create a lot of chances, which is what you should expect against Magdeburg, who are still, you know, have their issues defensively, it was quite difficult. Just the defensive errors, and they were just cut open way too easily. And Magdeburg ultra efficient going forward. Eight shots on target for 4 goals. That's really good industrial performance. So, yeah, we'll see what Kaiserslautern does. Obviously, Nuremberg, and then they've got Hertha on Saturday afternoon. That's a World Feed game. Check your local listings. Of course, that game's on ESPN Plus and beIN Sports Connect, so you should definitely go check that game out. Should be a fascinating one for Gramotsis against the Hertha side, who are starting to pick it up. For Magdeburg, well, you know, it's an important win for them as well, as they continue their road back to just some sort of semblance of form. But of course, as we mentioned, you know, form can be quite temporary and fickle, but for them to get back to that sort of positive goal difference, to start picking up results. We know this team has some really good individual players and one of the best coaches in the division. So they've shown a bit of resolve here. Can they make it 3 in a row? Of course, they've got the cup game against Fortuna Dusseldorf on Tuesday before making the journey to Greuther Fürth, which should be a really tough battle for them. And really good test of their defensive resolve, because as we've seen, Fürth have become a very efficient team going forward. Then they obviously end the campaign with Fortuna Dusseldorf. Let's actually talk about Greuther Fürth. They made the journey to Eintracht Braunschweig. Also the Saturday game, so we've got all the Sunday games in Group 3. 1-0 was your final score. An unfortunate situation for Braunschweig. Ermin Bacacic was adjudicated to have fouled Armindo Sieb. Julian Green from the spot, cool as a cucumber. There's some interesting stats here. And look, this caught me off guard, because it's not usually a stat that I look at too much. But that's Greuther Fürth's 8th clean sheet of the season, which is amazing to have. They're going at over 50%. And they've had some... And you consider the start to the season they had, where they obviously won the Paderborn game and then they went on that run of form where they couldn't beat anybody. It's been quite the recovery job. Defensively, they have really started to figure it out. 17 goals conceded, which is the second best defensive record in the division. St. Pauli, 4 goals better. But they've finally found a mix that works. And I said this to Seb off air, and I'll say it on air so that you guys can clip it if you want to keep that as a receipt. But Jonas Erbig as goalkeeper has the potential to be a German international. Not now, let's just, before any moderators try and take this out of context. He can be, Jonas Erbig could be a German international goalkeeper in a few years' time. And I genuinely believe that. There was a reason why Köln extended him with 1 year left on his deal at the start of the season before sending him out on loan. And through the tough games, we did see the challenges that a 19-year-old trying to really impress can face. But what we've seen is in the games where they've been the 1-0s, the games where Fürth have been under siege, Ulbik has been massive. And he was quite good in this game, made some really key saves to deny Johan Gomez, Sidi Sané. And, like, he's really, you know, he was the goalkeeper they were looking for because they did seek consistency, and that's no knock on Andreas Linde, who's a solid goalkeeper in his own right, but Ulbik has just the raw talent and ability of someone who will, at the end of the season, give Köln a bit of question marks to what they're going to do with their goalkeeping situation. Marvin Schwebe is having a great year for FC, but you have to really pay attention to what Ulbik is doing, and I know Fürth, if they will try and do everything they can to keep him, because he's a brilliant young goalkeeper with a lot of promise, and he's showing that in the 12 months he's been in the Zweite Bundesliga, he's been someone I've been mightily impressed with. On the Braunschweig side of things, they weren't bad in this game. They had their opportunities, and we spoke about the Sané and the Gomez efforts, and Multalp had his chance. I thought Multalp was really good when he came on for the injured Holgersen. But it hurts. The results didn't go their way on the weekend. And that 8-point gap must feel like a canyon for Daniel Schoening. There's still things they can take out from the game. I felt that they were good in transitional phases. When they got to the... Because it was quite fascinating to see that that Schoening didn't really play traditional number 9 to start. He had Sané and Gomez up top. But they played really well together. And especially when they hit the counter-attacking situations, they were quite dynamic together. And gave the Fürth defence a lot of grief. But just that lack of a quality finish deserted Eintracht. And, you know, now it puts them in a situation where the next two games, Wiesbaden away and then Kaiserslautern, they're massive games. You want to end, you know, you can't, off the top of my head, don't know many teams that have survived with less than double digits in points heading into the Rückrunde. It's going to be a massive ask for them. But we'll see if they can do it. I think that they're definitely a lot more offensively inclined. They certainly seem to have a little bit more going for them under Daniel Schoening than they did under Jens Hartl. So, yeah, some big games for them. Fürth got Magdeburg, and then they've got Schalke away to end their Hinrunde. Let's take the final break. This is going to be a much longer podcast than is usual. We'll take our final break and discuss all the action from Sunday. And we're going to start at the Olympiastadion when Hertha welcomed Elversberg. After three consecutive draws, Hertha were hoping to get back in the win column when they welcomed high-flying SV Elversberg to the Olympiastadion. A big occasion for a club that, just a few years ago, was playing Regionalliga football. Now they go to one of the biggest stadiums in the country to try and take down a Hertha side that are still in the rebuild phase. It looked like it was going to be a really good start for Elversberg. Palvano had opened the scoring, but after the VAR intervened the initial decision, it was given as handball and it seemed rather dubious. But, alas, it really sort of, in many ways, changed the tide of the game. On 12 minutes, Hertha would take the lead. A long throw-in by Fabian Riese was not cleared by Elversberg, and Linus Gechter got his first goal for Hertha this season. A theme of the day would be poor defensive work from Elversberg, and it was a really difficult outing for them. They did get back to 1-1 just 3 minutes later when Tor Jakobsen absolutely lashed one from outside the box. And even though Tjaak Ernst, who'd made a couple of really good saves early on, got a hand to it, it wasn't enough to stop Jakobsen's effort. The day was really about Florian Niederlechner. Niederlechner, who's dealt with injuries over the past few seasons, and even this season for that matter, he's missed a chunk of time. It was all about him. On 23 minutes, he would get his first goal of the campaign. Then on 61 minutes, Jonjo Kenny would find Niederlechner for his fourth goal of the campaign with the hat-trick, wrapped up just 6 minutes later when substitute Mikhail Karbovnik found Niederlechner. And to be honest, I thought Nikola Kristof should have saved it. He didn't. But Niederlechner won't care. His fifth goal of the campaign, and it's really good to see that he is finding some form and really thriving in that number 10 role for Pal Dardai. The final goal came on 71 minutes when Jonjo Kenny absolutely produced a thunderbolt through a gaggle of players and into the back of the net, and a fantastic result for Hertha, who now find themselves in the top half of the standings, unbeaten in their last five games. And in terms of goals scored, they are the second highest goal scorers in the division. It's the second time they've scored five goals at the Olympiastadion. And my, oh my, they look rather good. The one thing that will really please Pal Dardai was not only that their pressing was efficient, but they were mightily effective in the final third. 14 shots on goal, in total, five of them ending in the back of the net. That's a 35% conversion rate. That's going to please many managers if you can have such production through that. Also, five goals in the last two games for Niederlechner, which is, you know, a really good hit for form. If you take into comparison, some teams don't have players who have scored five goals as their top scorer. The pressing was really positive, and they do this really well at home. We've seen them overwhelm teams. They did it to Braunschweig. They did it to Fürth. They did it to Elversberg here, where they really profited from turnover. And even though they haven't been getting goals from Haris Tabakovic, the one thing that will please Dardai and Hertha fans is that they've got a vast range of scoring options, whether it's Prevoyak off the bench, Niederlechner showing, they've got Winkler, of course, Riza, who really is the focal point of this team. And they're certainly in a better situation than I thought they would be at the start of the season, where it seemed like everyone was looking for any which way to jump off the ship. But the old ladies really found a way to find steadier waters. And, you know, their next three games, they will feel they're very winnable. And we spoke about that they've got Hamburg in the cup, which will be a real fascinating encounter. And hopefully the atmosphere will fit the billing of what will be, in my opinion, a really top cup tie. Kaiserslautern away, which their away form has been spotty, but given the vulnerabilities of Kaiserslautern, they'll feel they can win that. Then they've got Osnabrück at home, which could be another one of those games where they bully play a bit of bully ball and really enter the winter break in positive stead. So a lot to like for them. And just the continuous improvement of what is a really young squad that is developing and finding a way. And look, I'll be honest, I had my reservations about Pal Dardai. You've heard those throughout the season. But it's slowly working. They're finding ways, and they should be very happy with where they're at the moment. It's definitely, for mine anyway, potentially above expectation. For Elversberg, it just was a bad day at the office. They just weren't at the races. Defensively, it was just carnage. They were disorganized. Their midfield really didn't help them out. They were constantly under pressure. And look, considering they've had such a great season to date so far, so I believe we can sort of ride this game off for them. They've been so good over the course of the season. And look, you know, this might be the second game. This is the second game they've conceded five goals. That game against Dusseldorf on match day four was the last time they did that. But then after that, they went on a magical run of form. So you wouldn't put it past them to figure it out and to get back to winning ways. But yeah, this game could have easily gone a bit different. They had the Vanna goal taken away. They were, you know, Ernst made those saves early on in the game. So it could have easily gone any other way. So for Elversberg, they've got Nuremberg at home, and then they're at Karlsruhe on a short trip to end their Hinrunde. Let's head to the home deluxe arena. It's Paderborn against Hannover. A massive game for both sides. Paderborn, it's been a really tough season for them. Two consecutive losses in their last two games, so they'll be hoping to get back to winning ways. Hannover winless in their last two as well. Wanting to keep touch with a promotion race, and And look, the job got really hard for them just 20 minutes in when Louis Schaub, I know what he's trying to do, it's not take the player out. And initially given as a yellow card by referee Wolfgang Hasselberger. But upon further review, the studs were showing it was reckless, a bit dangerous, and Schaub was given a straight red card. Zila was also given a yellow card because he crossed the over to where the VAR is, and he was out of play, and he had to get a yellow card for that. But in spite of having 10 men, Hannover defended really resolutely, and they were holding on for dear life because Paderborn were just pressing the issue. They were desperate to get a goal, and for Paderborn, they get the goal in the end, and it there's a touch of luck to it, if we're honest, but it doesn't matter how they go in, as long as they cross the goal line, it does not matter how it happens. So Florent Muslia trying to put a ball into the box. It looks like it's going to Christian Kinsombi. Kinsombi just out of his reach, but that curling nature of the Muslia cross deceives Ron Robert Zila into the back post, and Paderborn get a crucial win for them that moves them up to 10th spot in the table, leapfrogging the likes of Nürnberg and Kaiserslautern. It's a massive win for them. Obviously really impressed with Florent Muslia, the Koshovan international. He's going to be hot property. There's a good chance this is his last season in Paderborn. He's out of contract, and he's right to believe that he is someone who should be playing higher up. And his 7 goals this season, he's just been mightily impressive for what he does. He's such a versatile player and just incredible. It's been such an impressive display for him. And obviously, they probably could have scored more in this game, but some good saves from Ron Robert Zieler denied the fact for them. Look, Maxi Ruhl was really good. Same with Lauren Kuda as well, playing at sort of that right wing back role. And yeah, look, there's not a whole lot to say about this game. It was interesting, to say the least. I guess the big news pre-game was that Janne Kuyt was dropped for Pelle Bovink, the 25-year-old Dutchman's first Zweite Bundesliga game for Paderborn this season. And look, Janne Kuyt's a really good goalkeeper, but he's had a bad year from what we've seen during his spell at Paderborn, when he displaced Leopold Zingerle and really asserted as the best goalkeeper for that team. But he's just struggled, and they've been leaking goals, and I think it was worth a shot to try Bovink. And look, the circumstances of the game, he wasn't particularly busy. He almost cost them in the end when he was dispossessed by Trezaldi and Hannover got that ball in the box. But it'll be interesting to see if Bovink gets the start in Leverkusen on Wednesday. But yeah, that was kind of the interesting storyline for them. Then they're at Hamburg before welcoming Rostock home. For Hannover, Karlsruhe at home, and then at Holstein Kiel in the top game. That will end their Hinrunde. It's been fine, I think, for Hannover. They were obviously inconsolable after conceding that goal in the 90th minute, but because they had defended so resolutely for so long. But you know, we'll see what it looks like for them. But yeah, I think they've been okay. I think they've done very well to be in sort of the mix, but just what they do post this will be of much interest for us. And finally, let's head to the Wildparkstadion. It's Karlsruhe and Hansa Rostock. 2-2 was the final score in this game, and it was looking really good for Rostock early on. The opening goal is just look, there was some pretty bad defending this weekend, and the unfortunate goal, this first one, was where, you know, a really good save initially by Patrick Drevis, but it's kept in play by Ingelsson. Ingelsson whips the ball into Junior Brumado, saved by the initial save again by Drevis, and then Brumado just chips him with some venom to make it 1-0. They get the 2-0 just, you know, in 34 minutes. Karlsruhe unable to clear in the corner, and Dressel with a sensational ball to Damian Rosbach. And look, Rosbach's onside because Heiser on the far side is keeping him on, and then he puts the ball into the back of the net off the crossbar. At 2-0, they're looking really good. But a goal from Igor Matanovic just on halftime gave Karlsruhe life. They'd been subpar in the first half. Defensively, again, really ordinary. But at 2-1, it gave them a bit of hope. The hope almost went away in the second half when Bramado got his would have had his second goal of the game, but Engelsson absolutely lays out Sebastian Jung with a proper body check, and it's so funny to watch it because he actually sort of walks away, he dribbles away from the ball to take Jung out, and initially the referee Dennis Tytikin just gave it nothing and was like, oh, that's a fair play, and you know, Bramado scores, and you think at 3-1 the game's probably done at that point with Rostock taking the 3 points, but no goal to be, and then it seems inevitable now for Karlsruhe. Budo Zizhevatse, who scores on 81 minutes. It's a wonderful goal. I love that they've got a big Budo chant going on sort of when he scores now, which is awesome. There were thoughts that he should have probably started this game. He came off with Schleusner around 62 minutes, and he gets his goal. All four of his goals have been scored in the final 10 minutes of game, so he is really a clutch performer for them as a joker. Even though Patrick Drever has had those moments of concession, he was really good in this game. He made some unbelievable saves throughout the contest, and really a reason why Karlsruhe was still in the game. You know, despite the dominance on the ball, you know, Rostock had the better opportunities throughout the contest. And look, there's a lot to like. You know, it's an important performance for Drevers because he's had a really tough start to life in Karlsruhe. He's had, his performances have typically been quite mixed. He goes through hot spells and then he'll concede a really shady goal. But he was quite good. So they've got Hanover, then Elversberg at home to end their season, their first half of the season for Rostock. Yeah, they'll be disappointed they didn't win. I think reinstating Kai Pruger into the starting 11 was a really good decision. Played fantastically well. We saw Oliver Husing in the starting 11 as well, and he was serviceable. But yeah, the biggest thing that caught my eye in this game was when Rostock turned the ball over, how quickly Karlsruhe, through Vanitzek, through Nabel, through Stindl, were able to really start to dissect the defense. And those turnovers prove costly in games, and the first goal is a great example of that. They lose the ball inside their final third and you know, two passes in, and the Matanovic is sort of strolling it in. They've got some big games coming up. Schalke at home is a massive game on Sunday. Like, both teams have to win that game. And it'll be interesting to see the desperation. But Valia Schwarz in particular, it's been a really brutal stretch the last 10 match days for him, so they've got to really pick it up. And then Paderborn away, which, you know, if Paderborn have the confidence, it can be a tricky game. So it looked fascinating run home for both of these two sides, who don't want to be sitting 16th come Christmas. It will not be a very happy Christmas if that is the case. That's it from us. Obviously a big thank you to Seb, who had to leave, so we only got him for 3 games, but it was great fun nonetheless to have him on. He's such a great guest to have and to talk football, and yeah, it was fantastic. We'll be back next week to discuss all of the action from match day 16, not long until the winter break is upon us. Hope you have a fantastic week enjoying the DFB Pokal, and of course on the weekend when the Zweite Bundesliga is in action. So have a fantastic weekend, stay safe, and I'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.